But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Caffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So just wanted to start off the show before we get into all the club action with a little bit of personal news. I announced on Twitter on Saturday that I'm leaving Sports Joe and I'm leaving the GAR. So I know a lot of you listeners aren't even on Twitter, and I know a lot of you listeners don't follow me on Twitter either, for obvious reasons. So it comes as news to you guys now. I just want to say a massive thank you to everyone that listened to the show. I think we've 13 million listens since I started 5.5 years ago. So the show has become absolutely massive. And that's thanks to you guys taking your time out to listen to it. So I really, really appreciate it. And I'll be back in January doing my own thing. So that's about all I'm going to say about that. On to the club action.
You were trending on Twitter at one stage, Wally.
Was
it was a bit like, I actually logged on, I seen Wally trending on Twitter, and it was like Cristiano Ronaldo signing for United or something.
To be honest with you, I was taken aback by the reaction that I was leaving and the love people have for the show. I couldn't believe it, because usually I get an awful lot of abuse on Twitter, and sometimes you'd even doubt whether the show's popular, whether you're, I don't know, like, I mean, but the response on Twitter was overwhelmingly positive, and that was very humbling, I have to say. But anyways, listen, enough about that, because there's an awful lot of club action. There is no doubt in anyone's mind who the best club team in Kerry is at the moment. So we've 3 times Austin Stacks club champions, and now they're county champions, and on the way to being county champions, to beat East Kerry, who were double county champions, and they beat their rivals in the county final, Cairns O'Rattleys. Not the greatest on the eye, I have to keep qualifying this, but like, I mean, by far the best team in Kerry this year. There's zero doubt about that now.
Yeah, sure. I remember you saying on the show earlier this year that someone had messaged you that said nobody in Kerry cares about that club championship. So I'd say it was something that Austin Stacks, like, having won the last 3 clubs, they were definitely eager, like, you know, to win the one that really matters, like, and it wasn't the greatest spectacle, but I suppose the whole occasion, like, it was such a huge occasion, wasn't it? And you've seen that in Tralee before the game. In fairness to them, they by all accounts were the better team all along, as they have been, in fairness, the whole way through the championship. So definitely a deserved win for Austin Stacks.
Yeah, by all accounts, like, this game obviously was on television, but they were 12-6 up, Lee, and, like, I mean, they were coasting. Cairns O'Rattleys, it has to be said, they lost David Moran after 6 minutes to a groin injury. Like, I mean, and because they lost David Moran to a groin injury, Tommy Walsh couldn't play full forward. He went out midfield. Now, that's a huge, huge loss. They lost Gavin O'Brien, their big, tall, rangy wing forward, who'd be a kick-out option as well. He did his hamstring in the warm-up. Like, I mean, take out a top-class wing forward and one of the best midfielders in the country. A terrible bit of bad luck for Cairns O'Rattleys, it has to be said.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you don't want to be starting any game, let alone a county final, having to put out fires pretty much straight from the off, you know. Gavin O'Brien tweaking his hamstring in the warm-up, whether that's to do with the weather or whatever else, it's just down to pure bad luck. But one of the main things was the fact that, yeah, David Moran coming off and Tommy Walsh had to be moved into midfield. He's obviously more than capable there. It just means that they miss his presence in the full forward line. And it meant that Austin Stacks could put a lot of their focus on Connor Hayes, who kept him fairly quiet as well. I think later on, Walsh was moved back into the full forward line, and he was causing a lot of threat there. And they did sort of close the gap. Like, there was only a score in it in the end. And yeah, I mean, wasn't a spectacle to watch in terms of entertainment, but any Austin Stacks fan who was there will probably tell you it was the greatest game they ever saw.
Well, that's the thing. They got the county title back and they've 13 now, which is equal to Dr. Crokes. And, you know, like, I mean, they hadn't won it since 2014. But how long more will Austin Stacks, the traditional club that they are, why is it every game Austin Stacks are in is horrible? Like, I mean, how much, like, obviously there was great scenes after the match, great scenes before the match too. We know the Austin Stacks fans are fantastic. They marched through Tralee. You've seen some pictures of this. I actually think this should be something that's done in every county in the country, where the county grounds is in the middle, in the main town usually, you know. Start in the town, march your whole, arrange to meet all the children from the club, all the adults, march up to the ground in one big group. And then get into a section of the stand that's, you know, your group, and the other supporters do the same. I think it would add massively to the sense of occasion and, you know, the whole excitement around the county final. Children would love it now.
It looked like some crack there yesterday, in fairness, and there was a video of the Waston Saxes. They were heading up to the pitch, and there was a lad, there was a few lads playing the drums, and there was other lads shouting, "Come on, the rock!" Like, and they had chants going, and yeah, everything like that. Like, and it did. It looked brilliant. I suppose the fact that it was an all-Tralee derby, and those clubs, you know, they're so close together, and they hadn't played each other in a final in so long, that added to that excitement. Like, and
but you could do it no matter who it is. You're just it doesn't have to be your own town you're marching through. Like in Laois, you start in Portlaoise. You know the walk from Portlaoise up to the ground, Thurles, lovely walk up that hill, a famous kind of hill. Wouldn't it be great? Like every county can do this.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, it would be a great thing to do. I suppose it was just extra special for Austin Stacks yesterday that I think they're known as the Rockies, and that was Rock Street they were marching through. And it's such, I suppose, a long tradition with that club, but definitely would be a great thing to do. It kind of gets the supporters going and sets the scene for the game then.
Yeah, you mentioned Tommy Walsh going in full forward towards the end. So like we said, it was obviously 12-6. Kearns Rattley's got it back to 12-9. Now Tommy Walsh is in full forward. It's desperation stakes towards the end. Who goes in to mark him? The other twin tower, Kieran Donaghy, to put a bit of manners on Tommy Walsh. So that would have been nice to watch towards the end. I think there was one kind of last hopeful diagonal ball that went in, and Donaghy was able to shepherd it wide or whatever. He was able to block Tommy Walsh from getting it at least. So that kind of, you know, it would have added to the drama, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a lot of narrative beforehand about, you know, the twin towers. Each team has one tower in the full forward lane, basically coming up against each other. 13 years ago, they were the key pairing for Kerry, dominating defences all over the country. And now, you know, they're playing against each other in this All-Tralee final. You know, like that was part of the spectacle, and I'm sure fans were delighted to see them get in close to each other, but Kieran Donaghy got the better of him in the end.
Yeah, no, he definitely did. The Austin Stacks manager, Wayne Quinlan, said after the game, he says, "It's a dream come true." And I always thought you kind of say this as a bit of a joke without actually saying it, being serious. He says, "I sound like John Milan now when I was going to say I love my club. You cut me open, I bleed black and amber." Like, I often says, "Jesus, I bleed green and white." But I'd kind of be messing. Does anyone say that seriously, Niall? Or am I, maybe he was saying a joke and I'm just reading quotes.
I don't think he was joking, because I was reading the same article, and apparently he had to compose himself. He had kind of tears streaming down his face as he was given that speech. But yeah, if you cut me open, it bleeds black and amber. It's not something that you'd say.
Do you bleed blue and white and Laura?
Jeez, I suppose I'll have to say I do now, or I'd be shocked.
I kind of think you'd say it about someone else rather than, you'd never really say it about yourself, kind of thing, Lee. Is that kind of the right way to kind of look at it?
Yeah, I mean, I've had more clubs than Tiger Woods, like, so I can't really say it. You know, I bleed lots of different colours. It definitely is. Yeah, it's sort of like we say it, you know, as journalists when we're talking about these sort of diehard players who've been stalwarts for their club. You know, it's a phrase in that sense. But to go out and say it yourself, but we'll just forgive him saying it was all to do with the emotion and the occasion, and we'll put it down to that, because it's a strange one.
Yeah, self-praise is no praise as well, right? Isn't that it? It's kind of it. Well, look, anyways, listen, maybe we're overanalyzing the whole thing. St. Thomas has won 4 in a row in Galway. Now, just to put this into context, right? So, number one, a great Portlaoise man, Tommy Fitzgerald, is training them. And I never knew that last Thursday. So there's two Portlaoise men, Pat Ryan and Tommy Fitzgerald, I owe apologies to. I forgot Pat Ryan won a county title with Rathvilly and never even gave that a mention until the following Thursday. And Tommy Fitzgerald, who's a good friend of mine, is coaching St. Thomas's to a 4 in a row, and I never mentioned that last Thursday. So then, look, I don't know what, I'm just not around the pubs enough, I think. I don't hear this stuff anymore. Just to put a bit of context on what St. Thomas's have done here. All right, so the great Portumna team, a great team that Damien Hayes was on, they never won 4 in a row. It's never been done since the 1960s. Portumna won 4 All-Ireland clubs. They never won 4 in a row in Galway. The great Attenrye team of the 90s, they won 8 county titles in 11 years. They won 4 or 5 or 3 All-Ireland clubs, 97, 01, 00 and 01. They never won 4 in a row. They won a 3 in a row. The great Sarsfields team, they never won a 4 in a row. They won 3 in a row. Like, I mean, you know, I think this can be underestimated, maybe because Thomas's haven't been going too well maybe on the national stage in recent years now.
Yeah, but they've won 5 in the last 6 years in Galway as well, like, you know, and they won another one as well, their first ever in 2012. And like they won the All-Ireland club that year,
13,
and
like,
that was obviously like a tremendous year for them. And I remember all the Burke boys were involved in that, and there's still a lot of them going there today. Kenneth, he was playing that day, and he was the manager yesterday. Like, and I suppose it's just maybe the fact that, yeah, like they have suffered beatings. Like they were well beaten by Ballyhale, and Bursalee beat them 2 years ago as well, and just haven't really shown, I suppose, what they're capable of when they got to the All-Ireland club stages. But
Ballyhale beat them too, didn't they, in a really exciting game? Ballyhale, do you remember? Ballyhale were beating them well, and Thomas's came back but ran out of time.
In Thurles that day. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, they just haven't really in the last few years. But I suppose in Galway, they've just been fairly untouchable. Like, you always hear of, like, Thurles.
Is the standard dropped in Galway to what it used to be?
Like, I suppose
there was,
it must
Loch
have.
Loughrea were able to come along and beat Portumna. And beat the shit out of them. Yeah. But then they got to an All-Ireland club final. Is there anyone in Galway capable of doing that?
Well, the talk was, like, and Turlochmore got to the final last year, that they were the common team, and they've been very good underage as well in the last few years. But Thomas has beat them fairly comfortably last year in the final. Turlochmore were beaten this year in, like, the last 16. So we were talking about Clarenbridge last week. Like, they obviously, they're a common team as well, and they're a very young team, and they didn't do too badly at all in the final. Like, they ran Thomas's all the way. But St. Thomas's just have that extra bit in hand, and I suppose, like, you're kind of looking to see, is it young lads coming on? And there are a few young lads, like Oisín Flannery is their corner full forward, and he's a good player who's been playing for Galway under 20 teams. But it still is those main lads, you know. Like, it is, it's Conor Cooney. Like, he scored, I was counting it up this morning, he scored 337 between the quarter final, semi final, and the final, like,
right,
this year. And I know they gave two Hydens in the quarter final and the semi final, but, like, that's because he hasn't been on fire for Galway really in the last few years, but he's always done it for Thomas's. Like, James Regan, he's been playing for Galway, he played for Galway about 7 or 8 years ago. Like, he's doing the business. David Burke is still there, and they just have Shane Cooney, Fintan Burke, Aina Burke. Like, they've a lot of strength and depth, and it's hard to keep them all out. Like,
it is. Kenneth Burke, like you said, is the manager. He took over from Kevin Lally, who was the manager. But Kevin Lally's gone in with Henry Shefflin, who's sitting in the stand watching this. So Conor Cooney be feeling very, very good this morning. He scored 5 from play in front of Henry Shefflin in a county final. So I've been telling everybody on the show here for the last couple of months, I'd say, how good Port Arlington are, and they proved it yesterday by beating another very good team in St Lomans. And Robbie Piggott, who had the job of following John Heslin around Moor Park, joins us on the line now. How's it going, Robbie?
Well, Willie, how's the farm? How are you keeping?
Not too bad, not too bad. How come you always get these hard jobs?
Oh, I don't know. I always seem to get them. I don't know why.
What was it like, Mark and John? Like, I mean, you were just given the job of tracking them everywhere.
Yeah. Ah, sure. I would have marked John twice before there with Leash. Obviously, he's an unbelievable player, so I knew I was going to have my hands full. So we had a good old battle, plenty of back and forth, and it's all a bit of crack, you know. No more, you know that no more than yourself. So, and at the end of the game, you know, no love's lost. Shake hands, move on, win or lose. So, happy enough now.
Yeah, you were both well able for the rough and tumble. Like, it was an intense kind of a game. Like, I mean, Paddy O'Sullivan was getting blackguarded every time he made a run.
Yeah. No, we knew the intensity, especially when we would have played them in a couple of challenge matches there before. We knew that they were going to bring a serious level of intensity. So that was definitely to be expected. I'm sure it made for a good spectacle as well.
No, it was a brilliant game, a brilliant game to watch. It was a huge win for you because, like, I mean, obviously in Laois you're very well respected, and we all know about you in Laois. But, like, when you go to the Leinster club, the whole country kind of takes notice at that stage.
Yeah, no, definitely. I suppose this has kind of been, well, from our part, been coming for a while. You know, we had a really good crop of players there. Ourselves, we would have won the minor there in 2014, and then we went on to win 221. So we're getting the kind of where we want to be. Anyways, now we're kind of coming to the edge or whatever. Keith Bracken, his actually minor team that they won it in 2009. There's actually only one player from that team that kind of this is himself, and maybe one more that's still going from that minor team. So our kind of minors, we all kind of stuck together, which was great, and it's really after coming to fruition there now.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, we've been waiting for you to come along because we know you had good minors in under 21s, and I lived in Port Arlington maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and Shaggy Levy was looking for me to transfer to Port Arlington. He says, wait and you see the young lads we have in this club, and I've been looking to see you, and it took you long enough to bloody make the breakthrough.
Yeah. Like I said, the work that they do in the club at juvenile level has just been has been unbelievable. So it has, and yeah, it's really starting to pay off now, thank God.
So, like, I mean, what is would you put the kind of getting over the line? Because I know 3 or 4 years ago you had Portlaoise beaten until they rallied in the second half and they beat you. And like, is Martin Murphy, your manager, who's, you know, obviously got a lot of experience winning county titles, was that kind of the spark that you needed?
Yeah, well, I think even on that match against Portlaoise, when they came back against us, I honestly think that match was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to us, in the sense that, you know, we learned so much from that match, and we really kicked on from then. That was the last match that we've lost, and from Martin, he's done a great job since coming in. You know, he's exactly what we needed. You know, very honest, takes no crap, really kind of just sets the standard, and you know, we're delighted to have him, and hopefully he's around for a good bit longer, you know.
Yeah, so I suppose he's tough on the discipline side. I think a few of you went away on holidays after a league final, and he dropped you then for the first round of the championship. I'm not including you in that now, Robbie.
Yeah. I think that was the plan anyways, just to give other boys kind of a run, or give them their opportunity as well. But I'm sure heading away probably didn't help either, you know.
Yeah, well, that was it. You won last year's county final this year, and then you had a league final 2 weeks later, and he only put out half a team in that, was it?
Yeah. So it was we got the win, and then anyway, so we can't complain.
No,
can't complain too much.
So you went 1-6 to a pint up after, I think it was only about 15 minutes. After 10 minutes, a bit similar to what you did to Portlaoise, and then Lomans incredibly got it back to a goal, and they got a goal in the second half, and then they went 1-1. Now they're a very experienced team, you know. Like, I mean, they should be Leinster champions 2 or 3 years ago, only Moorfield came back in injury time. Like, you could easily have dropped your heads at that stage.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like probably poor teams in the past would have kicked the bucket at that stage after being up for so long, and then them coming back. We easily could have dropped the heads with the black card we had and our keeper going off. So really, everyone rallying together just was really unbelievable, and there was no way we were missing out on a chance in Croker, you know. Fair stuff, so it is.
Yeah, where in the build up to the game, like, you obviously wouldn't be looking ahead to Croker, but it's a huge kind of reward now. Like, I mean, a Leinster semi final. I don't think this has ever happened before.
No. We were just saying, I think none of the Leinster finals prior were even ever played in Crowbark, so it's an unbelievable incentive for us. And we'll like, as we were saying, we're not going up there for a day out. We're going up there to get results, simple as that, and I'm sure the other three teams in the semi-finals are going to take it from that perspective as well, you know.
Yeah, so it's Kilmacud Crokes now. There's definitely going to be a clash of jerseys. They clashed jerseys with Wolf Tones yesterday, so you might have to go a green jersey with a wine sash, which might look a bit cool.
Yeah, we have a set of green jerseys there, actually. They're lovely, so I never thought of that, actually, so that'll be good.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, listen, a little birdie tells me you're the only man from Port committing to Laois next year.
I don't know about that now. I don't know what birdies you're hearing from. But I know, I think there's a couple of even the younger boys there that were asked in, a couple of the boys in the full back line and that. I think they're definitely going in anyways, and Paddy's going to be there. So I think the rest of the boys are probably just assess it as we go on, and see how we get on in this, and then have a look at it. But it'd be great for Billy, I'm sure, to have as many poor boys in there as he wants. There's every single one of them, I feel like, it's good enough to put their hand up for a jersey, so they're a great bunch of players, so they're in fairness.
One thing that impresses me about Port Arlington, and I've seen you a few times, is the style of football. And I don't know how important that is to you. Like, I mean, you leave plenty, your full forward line always stays up. You know, Coffield always tried to hold the 45, and your wing forwards work, but you're always trying to move the ball up the field at pace. You know, if Paddy O'Sullivan gets the ball, he's 80% chance he's going to kick it, or else he'll go on a big run. You know, you're doing everything at pace and direct. You know, you see a lot of club games at the moment that a lot of it can be lateral and sideways. You're not like that at all.
Yeah, no, I think we've plenty of pace all over the pitch, and even man for man in our backs, we're very comfortable man for man, and kind of gives us that license to go forward and attack, move the ball, fast transition football, and yeah, makes good for a good spectacle. And like you said, Coffey holds the half forward line pretty well. We try and always keep four forwards up in their half of the pitch, and then break, yeah.
Yeah, and what, like, I mean, you do, like, I mean, you're not trying to drop loads of players back behind the ball, like, I mean, and is Martin Murphy happy for you? Like, John Cattle Bennett was outstanding yesterday. Shane Dempsey ended up getting taken off. He was beating him for balls. Like, is he's happy for you to say here, look, try and just beat your man out to the ball? Like it's nearly like old school football.
Yeah. We work very much on our kind of zonal defence and stuff like that. But man for man, like you said, Carl Bennett had an absolute unbelievable game yesterday. Like, he's still under 20, so he is, and he's just phenomenal, so he is. He's the best cornerback now I've ever played with. He's just unbelievable, so he's the best reader of the game. I see now. He's for his age. He's unbelievable.
He's just a small little fella like Joe Higgins. Hopefully your Kilmacud game will be on the television and people will be able to see you playing. Before I let you go, like, I mean, with Leash, you're in Division 3 now this year, so it's looking like Talton Cup unless we get to the Leinster final. Like, what are your thoughts on the Talton Cup? Like, we celebrated winning Division 4 and Division 3 leagues. I don't see why we wouldn't be, you know, looking forward to the Talton Cup.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose Leash, obviously, they're obviously, I'm sure their main aim for the year will try to be get out of Division 3, get back up into Division 2. I say for a lot of lads, maybe the proposal B not going through was pretty disappointing, especially for maybe those teams who are kind of on the brink of Division 3 and Division 2 that you would be looking to, you know, compete in the All Ireland series. So it's going to be an interesting one to see how it plays out. But for those kind of middle, even Division 3, Division 4, and Division 2 teams, I feel like their main main objective is the league at the moment. That's their main priority. And that'll be a big focus, I'm sure, for Billy for the year, yeah.
Yeah, geez, I'm being unfair on yourself and Billy. I'm almost have you down for not getting out of Division 3. If you get out of Division 3 and get to Division 2, then you won't be in the Talton Cup. So, I needed to check about that. Listen, Robbie, I know you're on your lunch break. I've taken up enough of your time. Thanks very much for taking the call.
No worries. Thanks, Will. Thanks, Will.
Yeah, good stuff from Robbie there. There's nothing that's not to like about Port Arlington. The home of Hughie Emerson. They play great football. They're young, they're fast, they're exciting. They have a sash. Like, I mean, what more do you want? Yeah, I would have won you over at the sash in Hughie Emerson. They didn't even have to be very good to watch.
The sash was the game changer for me there, I have to say. Now, I seen the jersey yesterday. It's maroon. Is it a green sash going down?
It's maroon with a green sash. And just like Robbie was saying there, it looks like, I was saying to Robbie, that could clash with Kilmacud Crokes. They have an in reserve, a green jersey with a maroon, with a wine sash.
Jesus, I hope it does clash.
I want to be sent one of these jerseys. Obviously, Kilmacud Crokes, Lee, I wouldn't say overly impressive yesterday. Again, back to that man, it's hard to talk about Kilmacud Crokes without talking about Paul Mannion. Like, he scored 5 from play. 4 of them were outside 40 metres, which I thought was very, very interesting. Like, if he's playing with Dublin, he's probably not kicking from there because, you know, it's too high. You know, the percentage chance of scoring it is too high, so Dublin generally work it towards the top of the D. So, you know, like, maybe he's just enjoying the freedom of being able to shoot whenever bloody hell he wants.
Yeah, he was an absolutely frightening form yesterday, to be fair to him. Some of them scores were just fantastic, and then his passing as well was just outrageous. And he set up the goal early on too with like a defence splitting pass, you know, just getting the head up and being able to work his magic from centre half forward is great to watch. But yeah, it's definitely a good point you made there about Dublin, like, especially under Desi Farrell this year. You know, Dublin, they hold on to the ball for a painfully long time, and they're constantly working about getting into this, what they call a scoring zone. You got to get it into the scoring zone and pass to the shooters. These are the phrases that you hear. And they'll hold on to it forever and for dear life until they're into that zone. And then that's when it is acceptable to shoot. But someone like Paul Mannion, you know, he has it in his locker that he can take it a little bit further out than what would be a typical scoring zone, obviously, and he does it for the club, and it's getting easier and easier to see why he enjoys playing for them more than for his county.
Yeah, his scoring zone is that little bit wider than maybe what Dublin want, but maybe Dublin are going to change next year and go back to maybe more of an exciting brand of football. Lee mentioned the goal there. Like, I mean, this is Ben Shovlin. This was the greatest fluke I've ever seen ever on a field, because this man did not know anything about this. I'm convinced this is the greatest fluke. Like, he shot, the goalkeeper saved it, it parried back out to him, the momentum of the shot, he fell over, and as he kind of did the roly-poly on the ground, it hit his heels. And when he got up off the ground, it says the most surprised person in the whole of Navigo. How the hell did that ended in the net?
Yeah, he ran away from it as if he was doing. Like, he was kind of he had a bit of confidence about him, like, and he was kind of going on celebrating, like, but he definitely hadn't a clue what was going on, like, because he fell on the ground, and as he was falling, he kind of gave it. It flicked off the back of his heel. The power got into the net. Then it went flying into the corner. I've never seen anything like it, to be honest. Like,
yeah, as the old stock GFI said, Jesus, if they did in the Premier League now, if Messi did that, we would never hear the end of it. But Lee, I don't know. What do you think, Lee? With, like, a fluke, surely to God.
He hadn't a clue about that goal, no. For sure. Because he would have lost sight of it, first of all, when he took the shot and it ricocheted off. He wouldn't have known where the ball was because he'd already turned his back to goal, and it fell just beautifully onto his heel for a sort of scorpion kick volley, like, and into the top corner. Like, I mean, it was outrageous. But here, he's absolutely right. I would have got up and pretended like I knew all about it and claimed it for dear life. But take that secret to the grave, although I don't think many people will believe him.
Yeah, here's an interesting one. Micheál McDermott, the Wolftones manager, after the game, he says, we talked about having a home venue for today. Looking at the Dublin County final, no disrespect to Parnell Park, but we felt it as much of an advantage to Kilmacud Crokes down here today to play on a surface like that, and they took full value of the quality of the venue. I would be surprised if, like, the manager's in a meeting with Wolftones saying what an advantage Navan is going to be to Kilmacud Crokes. Would he not be leaning on, you know, we're at home. Like, nobody likes coming to Navan. Nobody. I don't give a shit about the nice pitch, but they're coming to Navan. And we're the Wolftones, and they're not going to come in here. Imagine taking that whole kind of motivation-y kind of speech away by saying, this home pitch of ours is going to suit Kilmacud Crokes an awful lot here, lads.
It sounds like he was kind of calling his own lads sort of mullickers by saying that, wasn't he? Like,
a little bit,
know,
yeah.
Kind of like the.
It was a very weird thing to read. I thought
will suit Kilmacud, and they're kind of good footballers, yeah. And all this.
Instead of saying, we play here every we're used to this pitch, lads. These lads won't like coming down here. I wouldn't paint any picture other than that.
I'd say before the game, he hardly said that to the.
It sounds like he said we talked about it, unless he was talking amongst his management team, maybe.
It'd be a strange thing to say to the team, definitely, like, because, like, well, in fairness, like, Kilmacud, they are, yesterday's game, like, they kind of showed more to them than they showed in that Dublin County final, and they clearly are a good kind of a ball-playing team when they get the chance to play it, but, it's a strange thing for a manager to say. Because, like, Wolftones, like, it wasn't like a tremendous game, but, like, Wolftones showed a bit themselves as well, like, at different stages. They got a lovely goal. Keane Ward showed a bit of class there breaking in. Did you see the little dummy he gave? Dummy hop.
He, like, let on that he was going to shoot just to kind of ghost past the player.
Yeah,
a little
bit of class, like, and set up that goal. And there was different stages. Thomas Riley was kind of in, and it was times when he looked like he was going to do a bit of damage. Like, they have a bit themselves, so I wouldn't say they were looking to be playing in a bog, like.
No, definitely not. I thought it was a strange one. I'd definitely be pulling Keane Ward up on the free that he missed from the top of the D and nearly fell off my chair. I couldn't believe what it was after seeing. But he redeemed himself, got sent off then, an overzealous. One thing, Lee, like, I mean, you see these tackles, they're not dirty, but, like, I mean, you kind of swing in to dislodge that ball anywhere near a fella's chest now and you're running the risk. You're running the risk of them overplaying it and it looking at an awful lot worse than it was. Back in my day, you could always go in with a good fist to try and dislodge that ball. Mm-hmm. That's going out of the game now because nobody's taking that punch without kind of, you know, making it look worse than it was.
Yeah, that's it. And even if you hit them sort of square in the chest, their neck sort of flings back.
Yeah, they look whiplash.
Yeah, exactly. And it looks like, oh God, he caught him in the neck or definitely above the neck anyway. So it's definitely a grey area, but it's fallen more into the side that it's 100% a foul and a card in them instances now, rather than it isn't. We're sort of taught, like we're coaching this year, a lot of people are taught just open hands, it's just safer. But even getting caught in the forearm, is, and sort of like a chicken wing hook thing coming in, like it's becoming a more and more unacceptable tackle, and referees are quicker to dish out the cards for it.
And to be fair, like, I mean, the reality of it is that how often do you dislodge the ball with that anyways? Very rarely. Like the way technically you're supposed to tackle in Gaelic football is you wait till he plays the ball. He has to hop it, he has to solo it. That's when you get your fist in. So in general, now that it's so risky, there's a chance of getting sent off. The reward of doing it is very little because you very rarely dislodge it. And technically, you're not even supposed to do it because you're meant to wait till they play it. You know, so I think that kind of, you know, robust, I always associated with kind of Michael Murphy. Like he could kill you with a kind of disguised punch trying to dislodge the ball. But I don't know. I think it's too dangerous now with players making the most of that contact. One other bit on this game before I pass by, I thought it was funny. It's in Colm Key's report in The Independent. He says, us Colchis will love this, of course, about Dublin. Some of the younger Kilmacud players got lost on their way to Navan before on the way to the match. Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, the Colchis would be like, Jesus, you can't come in and come out of Dublin. They don't know where they're going. They're always in. They only know the way to Parnell Park or Croke Park. They couldn't find their way to Navan, some of the young lads, Niall.
Like, would you not just stick Park Talchin into Google Maps there and follow that the whole way? I don't know what the... I honestly don't know what the boys must have been at if they got lost on the way to... Sure, it's only about half an hour away from Kilmacud Crokes as well, so... Geez, I don't know what they're at.
Doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. The Glen were very impressive, Lee, against Scotstown. Like, I mean, they're a good team, Glen. Like, I mean, they're very good running team. They have a lot of pace around the team. Like, I mean, they're weird. Is it McFaul is a machine? Like, I mean, like, what's Rory Gallagher going to do with Kieran McFaul? Like, he's brilliant. They have McInnes, who plays that number six role in a similar way, bombing forward and being exciting. Like, does McInnes go wing back, McFaul centre back? McFaul does such a good job in that working wing forward role, but I almost think his performances as centre back nearly supersede his good performances at wing forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I heard someone talking about it and saying that he sort of plays like a quarterback nearly, you know, not just bombing forward, because like he still has his defensive duties that he doesn't shrug. He's always the first man back when they lose possession. But like when he gets his head up, he sprays some beautiful passes, and his kick passing is fantastic, really. And he's brave with it as well. Don't get me wrong, it doesn't always pay off, but it's like risk reward, and more often they're getting the reward from it. It's a headache Rory Gallagher will be happy to have, I'm sure. You're right, like Ballanderry, Starman, he definitely does a very similar role. But just watching Kieran this year, like, I can't really imagine him now in any other position, because I've watched so many of Glenn's matches. And, like, opposition teams, like, they can see it just as well as I can see it, but they clearly can't stop it. You know, I mean, and that's evidence enough nearly that it's probably his best position.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like, I mean, the problem is with Derry is that they need forwards. To lose a forward would be a bit of a, you know, of his quality would be a bit of a killer. So it's definitely something that he needs to think about. Conor Glass was up doing an AFL catch. He put the knee in the back, which is illegal in GAA, but it looks brilliant.
Oh, it looked unreal, yeah. And like, from the start of the throw-in, you just knew that he was going to win that ball. Like, Scotstown had Kieran Hughes and Darren Hughes out to try and... So Glenn wouldn't win the throw, and Conor Glass just up into the sky like it's and won the ball so handy off them, like, you know. And that one as well, I think they were calling it a screamer on Twitter today, when you put your knee into someone's back and kind of use that to get yourself up, like. But he's some spring on him, Conor Glass, like. Yeah. he kind of floats into the sky.
I suppose it is dangerous though, isn't it? Like, I mean, getting a knee buried in your back.
It's surely a free, like, you know.
Yeah, I think did Aidan O'Shea do a really spectacular one in Croke Park not so long ago? I don't know if he get blown. I suppose not dangerous if you can get high up enough to get your knee on someone's shoulder, but if like a knee into the back, you know.
Yeah, I wonder what way, like, it's obviously allowed in the AFL, like, maybe, I don't know how they're allowing it there really, but no, Conor Glass just the whole way, like, he's such a weapon for the, like, such a target for the Glen kickouts. They can lamp everyone nearly on top of him, like, because, like, nobody can stop him in the air, really. He's so fit as well. And between him and Kieran McFaul, they're just up and down the field. And once Glenn have those lads on the ball, like, they're they're really hard to stop, and I'd say they'd nearly be favourites for Ulster at this stage the way they're going. Like,
but probably, and they're weird. Like, I mean, they've very obvious brilliant midfield and the brilliant of McFaul, and their number seven wing back, his name escapes me now. He's very good going forward, and their full back line. They're a very strong team. They've no outstanding forwards. Like, as in, geez, he's definite county. Like, Talon is decent. He wasn't great yesterday. You know, their corner forward number 13 is a lovely wand of a left foot. I'm not sure if he's county standard. You know, like, they don't have a Paddy Bradley. You know, maybe that suits them, Lee, in that they're all kind of chipping in.
Yeah, definitely. There's more of a cohesive forward line in terms of everyone having to work together to get the scores on the board. Danny Tallon is capable of racking up big score lines on his day, but once you nullify him, then you can be more reliant on other players. But That was definitely a comparison that would have been made, you know, with Slack Neil when they were comparing the two teams, saying that they don't have like a Shane McGuigan, you know, who would consistently shoot the lights out game after game. But right. Like you said, they sort of spread the scores. Jack Doherty, I thought, was excellent in centre half forward.
Yeah, he was good.
He caught two of Roy Beggin's kickouts. He scored two from play himself, and he won something like 4 out of the 7 frees that were eventually converted by Glenn. So it's like every week that they play, you know, they have someone new that just sort of, not new, but like, someone different steps up to the plate and shows themselves. And it was an excellent team performance, I thought, because Scotstown, they're no joke.
Yeah, Scotstown were a tired looking team yesterday, though. There was no spark about them. All the spark was about Glenn, all the urgency and all the pace. And Scotstown just looked like they've been on the road a little bit too long. And then, you know, obvious the frustration, like the two Hughes brothers got sent off. We didn't see what Kieran did. But the Glenn player was holding his nose anyway, so we can put two and two together there. And then Darren ran in recklessly. McFaul ends up grabbing him. That would have been a good head-to-head there, Darren Hughes against McFaul. And then even like you saw Rory Beggin with a kind of a sliding tackle that was, you know, nasty enough, sort of a silly kind of challenge.
Yeah, they did. They lost the head definitely for a finish anyway. And I suppose you didn't see much of Scotstown at all really yesterday.
Like, no real quality, no.
Conor McCarthy got a lovely score to start it off, a brilliant one off the left foot, and the crowd behind him sort of went mad. Like, and you're thinking, because Glenn were after starting well, you're thinking Scotstown, they might come into it now, but they never really showed Anton. It was all Glenn, and I suppose that kind of from the throw-in, really, Glenn were just, they were on top, and Scotstown, they were getting frustrated and they were tired. And I suppose, like, it must be frustrating for them, all the county finals that they've won, and to not have really done it in Ulster, you know. And I suppose that team, they're probably getting a little bit older now. Maybe they had their chance before, so
I think that's their Ulster chance is gone now. I think they were well off the pace yesterday off a young, fresh, you know, team that they seem to have an awful lot more drive. Obviously, Malik O'Rourke would have known a lot about Scotstown, and you wonder, like, Kieran Hughes is I'd have a lot of time for Kieran Hughes as a player, but he absolutely has a short fuse. There's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, I'm sure Malik O'Rourke knows that better than me. Darren, less so of a short fuse. But, you know, these fellas with a short fuse, Lee, like, I mean, they can't help it. Like, they, you know, when a flashpoint comes, maybe if they've made a mistake or something's gone against them and they're already pissed off, you drive a shoulder into them and tell them they're useless, like, you're getting a box back. Like, no matter what way you look at it. Like, you can, I think these fellas that are totally fiery, if you wait for the opportune time, you can absolutely get them to react.
Yeah, absolutely. And some players, they just live on that edge, and they'll tell you that that's actually where a lot of their good play comes from, you know, getting fired up and getting stuck into tackles and everything else. But you can just dip over the edge that little bit too much and it results in a sending off. But I do think this was a bit of a masterstroke by Malachy O'Rourke, who maybe just knew the Scotstown team very well because of his time with Monaghan Football. He started Conor McDevitt, that was number 22, and due to do a man-marking job on Kieran Hughes. Conor McDevitt was a sub throughout the Derry Championship, but he started against St Eunan's when Emmett Bradley was off injured. And even though Emmett was back in the team this week, he still kept his place. And it was clearly to do this man-marking job on Kieran. And even when Kieran broke free and scored, you could see he couldn't help but celebrate every single point by getting into Conor's face.
He did.
And screaming,
he
at
shouted
him
down at him when he was on the ground.
Exactly. So Conor was obviously at him the entire time, you know, and making him so annoyed that, like, him scoring was like, that'll shut you up, but it was never going to shut him up. And he just stuck with him from box to box. And eventually, it worked a charm. Hughes got sent off. And then Conor, you know, with his free roll, showed how good a footballer he is and got in the scoreline himself. So, you know, I mean, he won that battle, you have to say.
Yeah, and it was Conor that was down holding his sore nose then, was it?
I don't think I've ever seen a man down as often in a game. He was down about four or five times, like, but He definitely won that battle anyway, because it was a sad sight at the end, at the very end of the TG Carr coverage. It was just Kieran Hughes walking away towards the tunnel, and there was now like kind of pat me on the back, but it was just a disappointing end for him, because he is such a good player, like, you know, and disappointing the way it turned out in the day.
Yeah, no, definitely. He was getting dogged from start to finish, and look, he reacted, I suppose. That was it. Ballyhale Shamrocks had a win. I got criticism for not covering this game last Thursday. I think it was a Mount Leinster Rangers. I don't think it was from Ballyhale anyway. They've had enough bloody, you know, plaudits, and everybody knows how good they were. It was Mount Leinster Rangers who had a dreadful start to this game, 10-2 down, and got it back to 3 points late on, and then Ballyhale rallied to win by 6. In the end, but a very positive performance by Mount Leinster Rangers, something that they can absolutely build on.
Yeah, well, sure, we were talking about that 8 weeks that the Wexford boys had to wait to play in Leinster, and Mount Leinster Rangers were the exact same. Like, I think it was 8 or 9 weeks they had, and as well as that, they were playing against strong wind in the first half. So Ballyhale kind of, they started well. Like, Adrian Mullen had 3 points before it was even 10 minutes played. Like, and there was Brian Cody was doing very well. He's been brilliant all year really for Ballyhale. Like, he's just he's own Cody's brother, but he's a powerhouse in midfield, and he scored a few brilliant points there at the weekend. But
Joe Cuddy, he added again. He's a new face there this year.
Like, he's been a great addition to the wing forward. Just a great man to take a score. And like Ballyhale, like Mount Leinster Rangers, they kind of, Ballyhale let them back into the game, but you always had the sense that Ballyhale would do enough. But there was one stage, Joey Holden was beaten to the ball by Chris Nolan. Like, he'd be Mount Leinster's, their star forward, like, plays for Carlow and all, and he got through and he hand passed across the square to his brother John, and he only had Dean Mason to beat from about, I'd say he was only just outside the square, like, and it was a brilliant save, in fairness, from Mason. He was put under a bit of pressure by, I think it was Holden getting back, but that was a huge chance, because it would have been down to 1 point.
Right.
Or I think it could have even been level then. It was 57 minutes gone, like, so. Wow. Like, Ballyhale, they were living dangerously for a while, but all through the game, and even after they missed that chance, it was all Owen Cody. Like, he's been amazing this year, really. Like, he's hurling a bit. He reminds me of John McGrath, the way he's hurling. He's kind of just, he gives a little shimmy. He's always finding himself. He's always able to buy that bit of space to have the strike for himself. And he scored a few brilliant points yesterday, just like a wizard, just popping them over the bar. Like, and he's hurling the stuff, like, he's been hurling well for the last few years, but he's hurling as good as he's ever been now the last few weeks. And like, he's two in a row Young Hurler of the Year. Like, he is, like, in the next few years, I'd say he'll be something special for
something
Kilkenny,
special, yeah. But like, in fairness, that the Young Hurler of the Year there, like, I mean, you know, they haven't been the necessarily outstanding candidate. Conor Phelan, he was Mount Leinster Rangers manager, Kilkenny man. He's in the Kilkenny backroom team, so he obviously would have known a little bit. So his stock kind of rises a little bit after a performance like that.
Definitely, yeah. And in fairness, like, Mount Leinster Rangers, they are, like, any time they do get through Carlow, they are, like, it's been St Mullins and them. It's always St Mullins and them, really, in the Carlow finals. But the two of them have done well in Leinster. Like, St Mullins got to the Leinster final only 2 years ago, and Mount Leinster Rangers, any time they get there, they got to the All-Ireland Club final in 2013. They've something about them, like, and they're well able to hurl these boys. And like, your man Dennis Murphy, he was playing back in 2013. He scored 12 points there at the weekend. And do you know, they're not bad at all. Like, and they put it up to senior hurling teams, as they're showing in Leinster. They put it up to them anywhere, like, any county.
No, they definitely are well able to. The match on RT on Saturday night, Kilcoo beat Ranmore United handy enough, really, in the end. We all know about Kilcoo. We said it last Thursday that they're a very good team, play the game, and, you know, at pace. They're not too much into the sideways stuff. They like a kick pass when it's on. They move the ball down the field, and they generally, you know, they look like natural footballers. Like, I mean, the big talking point that I saw coming out of the game was Eugene Branigan playing left half back wearing leggings, Lee. Like, I mean, how is this lad not ran out of Kilcoo? Kilcoo are sheep farmers. They're up a mountain, are they, Lee? And this lad is going to go on a cold night and need leggings to warm up his legs. Now, maybe there's a medical reason that this was done. Now, not that I can think of, but if you're a Kilcoo sheep farmer and you need leggings out on a Gaelic football field, I don't know, soft.
Oh, Don. I actually watched this in the pub with a few friends, and it caused a fierce debate.
I'm sure it would.
And we had to sit and work it out fairly. So we came to the conclusion that the only acceptable time to wear them is if you're a goalkeeper. We allowed that. That was as far as we were willing to go. An outfield player should never wear it. And then someone did raise the point of, like, a medical condition or an injury of some point. But I was thinking, like, if it's your right leg, say, that's hurt and that somehow helps it, then you've got to at least cut the leg off the left one and make it very obvious that you're doing this because of injury and it's nothing to do with the weather or being soft. You know, you have to be upfront with that sort of behaviour because it's just not on.
Like, if you can't wear a bicycle short and a sock pulled up to your knee, how much of your leg do you need to, like, I mean, number one, you don't need to do either of those things. Like, I mean, you'll warm up after 5 minutes. Now, I have to hold my hands up. Owen Moore from Oulart de Balla, 2013, now that we're mentioned in Mount Leinster Rangers. I was watching that game at home on TG Cahir and I remember tweeting, because this was a very close game and Mount Leinster Rangers beat them completely against the odds. And Owen Moore was wearing black leggings. And I remember tweeting after the game, I says, we've learned one thing today here, lads. You don't win Leinster finals in leggings, right? And they got a huge reaction. Even Rory Jacob from Oulart de Balla got fierce sore with me over this, you know. And he explained in a series of tweets that it was because of a knee injury. Now, I still didn't buy that. What kind of knee injury needs leggings? You don't need leggings. You don't need gloves. Like, I'm thinking of soccer players wearing gloves. They don't need those gloves. You're soft if you're wearing this stuff. I don't care if you call me old-fashioned and not with the times. That's the way it is. Leggings, no. No, no. Not for a challenge match. I would accept them slightly in a very, very cold winter night training. You might wear, you'd see lads in leggings, but a championship match.
You've never worn them, have you?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I might have worn them to training on some really, really cold night. I can't remember. Yeah.
It's not something you'd do in a... in a match now, to be honest, because I just don't think they're as comfortable and they're a bit annoying, like, but...
They are.
And you will get the slagging on top of everything else, like, but I suppose, like, Eugene Brannigan, I'm not sure is he a sheep farmer, but in fairness to me, like, he's a tough player and he's up and down the field no end. So I'd say if you're known to be as tough as Eugene Brannigan, you have to be.
Earned the right to wear them.
You've earned the right. I think you have
Kieran
to earn
McFall
the right
could
to wear,
wear
them
and none of us would say a word.
Could. I wouldn't go near him. I wouldn't say anything to him. So.
It's probably truly, if Kieran McFall wore leggings the next day, I probably wouldn't criticise it. He's earned the right to wear them. I don't think Brannigan has done that yet.
If Kieran McFall is wearing them, then I'm going to be wearing them at the next match as well. Like, that's if you get away with it, for sure. No, I've been known to wear them at a training session or two or whatever. But like, no, in a match, I don't know. You're just asking for it then. But maybe that is what he was doing. He was trying to hoax them in. Come on, get stuck into me and then I can show you a thing or two. But definitely not for me.
You made a comment here earlier on to me, Niall. I actually wrote it down on my list here. It said, for mountain men, they've an awful lot of posers on the team.
Well, in fairness, some people might call me a mountain man as a sheep farmer as well. And I'd say I've definitely been called a poser a few times as well. So I'd say the Kilcoo lads, if they're
listening... That's a stereotype of sheep farmers, and I think it's a very unfair stereotype.
But when you're a sheep farmer yourself, you can say whatever you want to do. So there's no trouble there. But if the Kilcoo boys are listening, they should take that as a huge compliment.
Yeah, well, the big compliment is that Kilcoo are a brilliant team, and we knew that. They're All-Ireland champions. They could easily have been All-Ireland champions. They had Cara Finn in all sorts of trouble. You know, the Johnson brothers excellent again the other night, and we know how good they are. So we're only having a bit of crack with Eugene. Well, I'm having a bit of crack on Eugene Brannigan. I want a message to go out that this is not acceptable in Gaelic games.
Unless you've earned the right, in fairness, yeah, we give them that one.
Okay, continue on. Oh yeah, I want to give Sean McAvoy from Ramor a shout out. He got the first goal of the game and it was a beautiful little goal. So it was, I saw it described as a soccer goal. The finish was soccer because it fell out of his hands. But I would think that the winning the ball in front, turning, facing his man and the sidestep was what I thought was the most impressive thing. Got around his man. Lovely. He's only a young player, Niall, Sean McAvoy.
Yeah, I'd say the reason they were calling it a soccer goal is because this fella's been playing for Ireland under-17, under-19 teams in European Championships. And I think he's up in like the League of Ireland up in Northern Ireland. He's playing with a club up there as well. Apparently he's a brilliant soccer player. So I'd say that's why they just wanted to get the little reference in there. But... He was brilliant in the Cavan Championship as well. He's really kind of a buzzy corner forward, yeah. And he showed it all for that goal. Just showed pace and a bit of trickery as well, and brilliant finish on the half volley.
What I love about it is that, like, you win a ball out in front of your man, right? Now, and I learned this as I went on, as in the full forward line, you win the ball, the best thing you do, the minute that ball hits your chest, you try to turn to face your man, then you can go left or right. Whereas if you keep your back to your man and you kind of have to loop left or right, do you know what I mean? But if you can get that turn and he's not close enough to you. So what I actually did, for anybody listening, you know when you jump to collect the ball into your chest? By the time I came back down onto my feet, I was trying to get turned. So when I got down on my feet then, now you can go throw your shoulder down one way and you're gone the other way. I'm telling you, trust me, you'll beat your man so much easier than, you know, collecting it, keeping your back to him and trying to turn left or right. If you do that, generally good defenders will meet you on, say you're predominantly left footed, he'll know you're going to loop around that side and he'll nail you within, you know, he'll be on top of you. Whereas if you can somehow jump, collect the ball into your chest and get around, turn facing him, now they don't know what to do with you because the, you know, the drop of the shoulder. But I thought Sean McAvoy did that very well when he won it in front. He made sure to turn and face his man immediately and now go at him and go left or right. Anyways, I thought that was impressive. So the club championships, as I always say, continue to deliver. We've covered so far the games on TV, and I was at the Port Arlington game. These are the games that weren't on television. Extra time thrillers, Lee. I always say this is the best time of the year. We're seeing, learning so much about the best teams in all the different counties. Wolf Tones, Glen, you know, we knew about Kilmacook Crokes. Hopefully teams will see Port Arlington. You know, just you're exposed to way more good players that you wouldn't have known. Only supporters within each county kind of know. And now we're all seeing them. Have to pull you up on this though, Lee, the first extra time. So there's nothing I love more. He might have beaten me on the sports psychology stuff, but this Tyrone club, this Tyrone club football, like, I mean, I'm going back to my original argument. Tyrone have not won an Ulster title since Argyll Kieran in 2002. They have not made a final since 2002. Yes, they have an outstandingly exciting championship, one that we all like, and that 8 to 10, amazingly 8 to 10 teams could potentially win it. But the standard isn't great. Discuss.
Well, I would make the argument that Tyrone are actually the most consistent team in Ulster Championship history because we know what we're going to get from them when they go out. They do it every single time. They get knocked out pretty early. But in Dromore's defence, like, they didn't put a bad account of themselves against Derrygonley. Derrygonley, I think, are criminally underrated a little bit as well. They were very unfortunate in the sense that Emmett McNabb had to come off pretty early, and obviously they're very reliant on him with the scores. And then they were a point up and they looked like they were going to win the game. They were shutting up shop. They were passing it among themselves, but it was sort of hard to see with the stream I was watching. It was like a slippy surface and one of the players fell. They broke free. They got a free kick, or Derrygonley got a free kick, and well over 40 metres out against this ferocious wind that was annoying the whole game and upsetting the flow of the game. He kicks a monster score, and that was Conall Jones. And with their tails up, they just rallied on in extra time. But in terms of Tyrone football finally making a push in Ulster, you're definitely going to need to see a team win at least two titles, county titles in a row in Tyrone, you know, and getting a bit of Ulster experience and then going back into Ulster with a similar enough team, you know, and they could actually benefit from that experience. Yeah. Because it's always these large gaps before one particular team gets back in again.
I don't buy that. Like, Derrygonley beat Trillick, who were probably the most consistent team in Tyrone over recent years. I think it was 2 years ago, the year Matty Donnelly, you know, I think he did his hamstring terribly. That went to extra time as well. But, like, I mean, this is Tyrone clubs not able to beat the Fermanagh champions. I accept all the idea Derrygonley are overrated, but Derrygonley now, they're no Cross McGlenn, or they're no Glenn. Or, you know, I'm giving Glenn a huge compliment there, throwing him into Cross, with Cross. They're all Slock Neil, for example. The reality is, like, I don't accept the point that Tyrone clubs are happy with winning Tyrone. Yes, they're happy winning Tyrone. Tyrone footballers are lunatics. They're probably the most, you know, driven, winning, win at all costs players that I've ever come across. Like, they're mad, and like, even just shown by example the way they're able to beat Monaghan, you know, have the COVID thing, beat Kerry, beat Mayo, and win an All Ireland that was never expected. They're winners, right? And that filters right throughout club football within Tyrone. It's massively competitive. It borders on killing each other. It's so competitive. There is no way I can accept that Tyrone clubs come out of Tyrone, now they're representing the whole of Tyrone, and that they're not going bald-headed to win an Ulster club title for their county. I don't accept that they're just happy with their county title.
Oh, no, nor would I. I definitely wasn't implying that Tramore were totally content with winning a Tyrone championship. I just think that having experience definitely plays a part, although then you could use the argument that Glenn obviously were never in Ulster before, and yeah, they're doing very well this time around. But as like I said, like Dromore did, they went hell for leather. They didn't have their best forward or, you know, their high scoring forward on the pitch, and they still, you know, they managed to get it to extra time, and they really looked like they were going to win it. I mean, there's no one particular answer. Like it definitely seems like even the fact that Trillick are arguably the most consistent team in Tyrone, but even then they won it in 2019 and then 2015. And that was it, you know, before that was the 80s. So, like, it's not like they were hugely overall dominance. Like, it is just so well divided within the championship and split that it's hard to get them any sort of momentum then going after a county title and getting used to being champions and bringing it forward. But, like, it's not an excuse by any means, you know. They just came up against the Derry Gonley side who managed to pip them in the end.
Yeah, and sure. Okay, so we'll move on from that. We'll just agree that Tyrone Club Championship is brilliantly exciting, but the standard isn't that great.
I think Lee's after agreeing was there. It was kind of a roundabout way he was going, but...
I think
he's after giving it to us there.
In another absolutely incredible game, Clonairn beat Creggan. Creggan, absolute heartbreaking stuff from them. There's highlights of this on BBC Northern Ireland Twitter account and on the website as well. So there were 6 up at halftime, Creggan were. There were 7 up into the second half, and then Clonairn made this big comeback. Creggan were still 2 up in stoppage time, and Clonairn still managed to score the 2 points. And if anybody wants to see Tiernan Kelly's free at the end, so I'll describe it a little bit, but again, it's online if you want to Google it. Tiernan Kelly has a free, and I'm not sure he's a free taker, but like, I mean, this was maybe a metre outside the 45 and a metre in from the sideline. Like, it's not a kickable free. Not in this conditions, not in winter time, but it was almost like the last kick of the game. And he boomed it over the bar. Like, I mean, an absolutely incredible kick considering the pressure, Niall, and considering Turbot is the free taker. Well, he's probably the right-footed free taker.
I think the umpire must have thought it wasn't a kickable free either, because after it boomed up into the sky and you could kind of see the mountains beyond the ball, it was gone so high, it landed down and lamped the umpire on the back. Like, he was kind of bending down and he gets a belt to the ball.
But it went way over the bar.
Well, it was well over, yeah. Like, and it was a brilliant kick, because he wasn't hitting the frees earlier in the game. Your man Turbot was, and to bring him onto it, it was the last roll of the dice.
I'd say it was down. Like, who's got a booming kick here, lads? Who can cover this distance? And you know, when he seems to have a fair old booming kick on him.
No, it was brilliant. Like, because you know, like, that was the last chance as well, and there was a lot of pressure riding on that kick, and they needed him to score, and he stepped up when they needed him, and they took off then in extra time. The goal, I'm not sure what the wing forward's in that got the goal in extra time, but it was a brilliant finish into the corner as well, and they took off from there. And like, the Ulster Championship, it's fairly exciting this year, isn't it? Like, between Glenn going well and the Tyrone teams, well, maybe we expected them to lose anyway, but it was definitely those highlights worth watching there in the BBC.
Yeah, they are. Have a look at them. Kevin Small is a player. He scored 4 from play, Lee. He only came on as a sub against Armagh, and if you watch from the highlights, just this lad looked like an absolutely sensational player.
Yeah, he looks fantastic. It's funny when you see that, like, these players, they play a county, but you say it was only a sub, and like, It just doesn't do them any justice. You instantly sort of judge them based on that. But
well, I have a problem with subs.
Yeah. Well, then they come on. You see them in club football, and they're just completely dominant, and they're, you know, the bright spark. And then a lot of that's down to like what way your team plays football. It maybe suits club better than it does county, or just with the managers, or there's 100 different reasons. But it was fantastic yesterday.
Yeah, and lovely left and right footed player, lovely balanced player, lovely big player, and like, I mean, Enda McGinley. I don't know. You know, maybe there's some stuff that, then again, I'm not going to make a judgment off seeing maybe 2 or 3 scores in the highlights. But I'd like to see more of Kevin Small. He's for Creggan and for Armagh. So yeah, for Antrim. A-Rugby beat Loughmore Castellini. Loughmore Castellini dream is over in the football after extra time. Who would have, nobody's going to be surprised about that. And no one's going to be surprised at who kicked the equalising score for Loughmore Castellini to bring it extra time. John McGrath.
Who else is it going to be like? And
holy shit.
It's just, yeah, apparently it was a great score as well. It came straight from the kick out. I'm not sure whether he caught it or whatever, but he scored that one. And then when the game went to extra time, he kicked a 40-metre free to put them 1 point up. And you were kind of thinking, here we go again, like, because the whole way through the game, Aeroganis, they were up. They kind of had a 2-point cushion the whole way through. And Loughmore, as they've been doing the whole way through the season, they kind of clawed their way back into it, and they got there right for the finish. In fairness, the extra time, it probably was just a step too far. Like, it's the 18th week in a row now, and maybe the legs were a small bit tired, but that probably is a disservice to Aeroge, in fairness, because they've got some brilliant players as well, like a lot of lads who play for Clare, and they seem to just kick on and got two good goals when they needed them. Like, so
I think the Loughmore Castellani, I saw a clip on Twitter, Loughmore Castellani supporters, like, you know, came down on the pitch and clapped all their players in off the field at the end, as in, yeah, thanks very much for the journey.
It's no surprise, in fairness, the joy they brought to those supporters in the last few weeks.
An extra time again.
Yeah, I know. It had to go all the way, really, when it was Loughmore. But you kind of just think, like, do you know, I suppose as more of a hurling person in Tipperary, I nearly have higher hopes for Loughmore in the hurling championship. I know they have to play Ballygunner next weekend, and like that'll obviously be a big ask after going to extra time this weekend. But were they going to win the Munster football? I don't know. Like, you'd fancy maybe St Finbar's or Austin Stacks. They'd probably be the favourites for that now. But I'd give Loughmore every chance against Ballygunner next weekend. And if they were to beat Ballygunner, like, to not have the football probably at this stage now, like after 20 weeks, it wouldn't do them any harm, I'd say, anyway.
Right, well, we'll leave that preview for Thursday. Well, I'll give them no chance against Ballygunner, so we can argue about that on Thursday's show. You there were one team that you left out there of your talking about St Finbar's, you're talking about Austin Stacks. What about Newcastle West? So I dismissed Newcastle West as complete also-rans 2 years ago. There was no Munster club last year. 2 years ago, they were playing Nemo Rangers. I don't think I even gave it a mention on the show. Oh, that's a one-sided win anyways. It was 1-9 to 9 points. Newcastle West, Ian Corbett's team, really making good strides. And they beat the Nair 8-6. Didn't sound like a classic at all, but they're definitely a team that's on the up, Newcastle West. So they have to play Austin Stacks next. Look, there's no doubt they'll be up against it, but it definitely deserve a mention that they're on the rise. In the Nair's defence, they weren't at their full strength. Their manager was saying after the game, we had a bad week. We lost 5 players with COVID. Then we lost Shane Ryan to a hamstring. We lost key players like Jamie Barron and our captain James McGrath. I'm not sure if that's on top of the 5 with COVID and Shane Ryan with the hamstring, or it is within that. But anyways, like, I mean, that was it. That was 8-6. Newcastle West definitely deserve a shout out. Another one that we wanted to mention was Knockmore. They beat Turlestrand. Knockmore last got into a Connacht final in 1997. I'm sure Knockmore won the All-Ireland that year. They beat Aeroge in the semi-final. For sure, that was that great Aeroge team back in the 90s. That was in Mullingar. I think there was something about that on television, maybe during one of the lockdowns. They're back in the Ulster final. Turlestrand were doing really good. I think it was 8-6 winning, and Knockmore scored 5 of the last 6 points or something like that to catch them towards the end. So they deserve a mention. I'm sure we have left out some sort of matches, lads, but, like, I mean, at the end of the day, we'd only be listing out little bits of results at this stage. Other bit of news over the weekend, Lee, just to finish up, is Paddy McGrath has retired for Donegal. So, you know, old school cornerback, kind of a real man-marking cornerback that he started out as, and then he kind of turned himself into, like all cornerbacks did then, notions about getting up the field.
Yeah, absolutely. And what a player for Donegal he's been. It's my, like, he's only 32, so, you know, he's by no means old, but he's,
yeah,
been
his
sort
mileage,
of hampered.
Yeah,
he's hampered by injuries as well. Like, I think he did his cruciate in 2019 against Mayo in the Super 8s, and that's always something that's really hard to come back with, and something that you need to, like, constantly manage then for the rest of your career nearly. So probably that weighed on him in terms of making this decision. But yeah, 12 years with Donegal. He's won an All-Ireland title. He has that in his back pocket. He's got 5 Ulster medals as well. And I think he's got 2 Division 2 medals too, if they mean anything to him. But, you know, his trophy cabinet's full. He's legendary status in the hills of Donegal as well. I'm sure he can retire completely happy with his county career.
What's that like in Tipperary, being a big you know, traditional hurling county? Like, I mean, if you don't have an All Ireland, is it, you know, are you kind of seen, like, you know, are you seen as a bit of a he never won one, like, almost a little bit of sympathy on that chap?
I suppose I'm kind of, yeah, like
that's for a next
way,
county player.
That's the way you kind of think of like any of the great players, isn't it? When they haven't won a All Ireland medal, be like, do you know?
We're not really in leash now because we never win them. But in a county right. like Tip, where every decade you're going to win one, and then you have a chap that never really got, you know, he's no All Ireland.
Yeah,
that chap.
I suppose I'm trying to think of like the best Tipperary players who didn't win an All Ireland. I'm not sure who kind of springs to mind, but I suppose it would be something that you kind
Paul of Shelley.
Paul Shelley, yeah, who's he? I know. No, like it is something that, like, I suppose when, yeah, with Tipperary, like you kind of expect to win an All Ireland every 5 or every 10 years at least. Like, and if a lad is a good hurler, you'd hope that he would retire with one, you know?
Yeah, retire with one. So Paddy McGrath, congratulations on a great career. And I'm sure there's a lot of corner forwards glad that you're gone. Right, we'll leave it there, lads. That's all we've time for today. We'll be back, though, on Thursday. And we'll preview all the provincial championship matches then. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey is eating. A donkey is a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him.